order. We hope this conviviality with our distinguished colleagues with the Senate will prevail during the entire course of this legislative session. Members of the Senate and of the Assembly and our guests in the chamber, I am most honored to present to you a very distinguished Californian. He serves the executive branch admirably, as well as serves our colleagues in the Senate as the president of their body. I am most honored and pleased to present to you the Lieutenant Governor of the State of California, the Honorable Ed Reinecke.
Mr. Speaker, President Pro Tem, Senators, Assemblymen, and guests, Happy New Year. I'm delighted to have this opportunity to be in this chamber and to see for the first time what caused all that problem and all that dust for the past several months, but I admire your planners and your contractors. I think it's a real improvement, and I'm sure that you'll find a more communicable working relationship now that you have a speaker and now that everything is off on a good to a good start. I would like to say only on behalf of the executive branch that I look forward to working with you in the Senate as well as in the Assembly to bring to California the type of leadership, the type of productive, creative legislative session that I know we all have as our principal objective. And while we may find differences from time to time throughout the session, I'm certain that providing we do keep the principal objective, namely the best interests of the people of the state of California at heart, I'm sure that we will find this to be a session that we can all be proud of having some association with and look forward to the realities of that session. The personal interests that I have, particularly in the responsibilities as Lieutenant Governor, look to the future of California because we get into many areas of planning. The State Office of Planning, the I-Corps, the Model Cities, many things where we're looking to the basic human problems and the natural resource problems of the state of California. And I hope to work with you gentlemen, to work on a cooperative basis, to look to that future when we can reconstruct that which we have lost and to maintain that which we still have of that wonderful quality of life that we call California. Thank you very, very much. I'm delighted to be here and I'm looking forward to the speech we're about to hear.
I'd like to announce the following members of the Assembly appointed by the Speaker and those appointed by the President Pro Tem to serve as escort for the Governor. From the Senate, Senators Bergner, Burns, Dukmejian, Stevens, and Teal, Assemblymen Berryhill, Conrad, Detta, Lewis, and Porter. If those members will retire to the rear of the chamber and escort the governor to us, we would appreciate that.
Thank you. Speaker, members of the Assembly, members of the Senate, I have the honor to announce the presence in the Assembly chambers of His Excellency, the Governor of the State of California.
I haven't had a very long tenure as Speaker of the Assembly, but I have had the opportunity of working with two different President pro tempores of the Senate. In both instances, I've had very excellent cooperation in meeting the challenges that we have here in California. Since the change in the leadership in the Senate, I've had the pleasure of working with the present Senate pro tempore very closely. Our relationships have been excellent as it relates to the administration and the affairs of the two houses of the legislature. I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to introduce to you a man who was able to get elected to his position in less than 30 minutes compared to 6 hours that it took in this particular house. The Senate President pro tempore will introduce the governor of the state of California to us at this time, the Honorable Howard Way.
At this time to present to you the distinguished governor of our great state of California, the Honorable Ronald Reagan. I always find myself in this particular moment each year thinking that I should say something about welcoming you all back, and yet it seems only yesterday that we were saying goodbye to each other for a brief time. Mr. President pro tem, Mr. Speaker, and Mr. Speaker pro tem, members of the Senate, the Assembly, and ladies and gentlemen, it is in the nature of such things that such a joint session of this legislature, I'm expected to deliver a state of the state message boasting about some of the things that this administration has already done and listing some of the programs that we intend to launch during the coming year. And traditionally, this recital of hoped for legislation is referred to as the laundry list. It's also in the nature of things that such messages be debated. Rebuttals are prepared even before the remarks are formally delivered. Some excoriate and some defend and some decry and others praise inclusions. But now and then, a people in a particular moment of time are called upon to rise above the norm. Their chosen representatives, elevated from politics to statesmanship, make landmark decisions, and men for decades to come hark back to those decisions and are guided in their own deliberations. I believe that we are met here in such a moment of time, a moment when we should be more concerned with the next generation than the next election. Just 6 days ago, the world embarked upon a new decade. It brought with it achievements and the scars of the 60s. It signifies more than just a measured span of years. It introduces its own imperatives and it stirs our souls for a new spirit. Since we last met like this on January 7th, 1969, about 300,000 individuals have been added to our state's population. It's predicted that by 1980, there may be, well, some 25 million people living within our state. Every year, as our population grows and our problems increase, we're called upon to perform minor and even major miracles. But while such growth can mean progress, it can also mean degradation. We're already faced with a chronic shortage of funds for such capital facilities as the State Water Project because of the tight money market. The proposition on the June ballot, which will allow us to raise the interest rate ceiling, must pass. or we'll face serious, almost chaotic, contractual and construction problems. We're challenged to protect the safety and the liberty of our citizens and to provide a climate for economic development which, while preserving the priceless, irreplaceable natural resources, will still meet the problems of this expanding population. We seek ways to accommodate those who want to share in the magic of California without allowing that magic to be swept away by a wave of people and pollution. We must provide all of these services and all of these protections without confiscating more and more of the taxpayers' earnings. These are some of the imperatives of the 70s that should bind us together in common effort. They demand a common commitment greater than any personal ambition and stronger than any partisanship. Now, this being an election year, there'll no doubt be many evidences of partisanship, and properly so, because the two-party system is essential to our government of free men. It's important that we argue things out, so long as we argue about the right things. In the coming weeks and days, I'll deliver to you definitive messages for specific requests and legislation dealing with some of the imperatives of the 70s. The laundry list will come in installments. I know you won't want to miss a single exciting episode. There's no subject that's more on our minds than the preservation of our environment and the absolute necessity of waging an all-out war against the debauching of that environment. A booming economy and the good life will be no good at all if our air is too dirty to breathe, our water too polluted to use, our surroundings too noisy, and our land too cluttered and littered to allow us to live decently. One of the great bays of our state is already so badly polluted, it's unsafe for many water sports, and yet every day, some 100 million gallons of human and industrial wastes are dumped into it. And along the Santa Barbara coast, seeping oil continues to ruin the beauty and endanger the wildlife. And it's nothing less than irresponsible demagoguery to pretend that the turn of valve or a simple edict can resolve this tragedy. No one can be indifferent to the distress of those along that scenic coastline. It goes without saying that the oil pollution plaguing them will be cleaned up, and that a guarantee that this continue to be true must be permanent. We stand ready to use the tough provisions of the Porter-Cologne Water Quality Control Act if necessary, including the requirement that those who are responsible for oil spills are responsible for cleaning them up. But it's even more important to find a way to end the threat of such pollution. When the federal government began granting leases outside the three-mile limit, and more than a year prior to the disaster off Santa Barbara, we urged that before either the federal government or the leasing companies took any profit, a percentage be set aside as insurance for the nearby coastal areas. This proposal was ignored. When we learned that federal drilling regulations were only one-third as effective as those we insist on in California leases, we urged the federal government to adopt our standards, and we offered to take over the policing of federal leases. This suggestion also was ignored. There is general agreement that the oil spill last year could not have taken place had the drilling been done under our state regulations and policing. The present Secretary of Interior adopted our standards almost immediately upon taking office. We support the State Lands Commission ban on any new drilling of offshore lands under state jurisdiction while we make certain that safety and containment devices are adequate to protect the public interest. We've urged the federal government to do the same. We've already joined with local governments to force the revocation of recent federal drilling and platform permits pending public hearings. And while we continue to seek scientific information and opinion on the long-range answers, we cannot ignore the findings of the scientific panel chaired by Dr. Lee DuBridge that pumping should be continued to relieve pressure buildups which cause seepage through the fractured and unstable channel bottom. The most recent oil spill would seem to lend support to the DuBridge theory, since it resulted not from drilling, but from a four-day halt in pumping. There is also the history of the oil seeps in the Santa Barbara Channel going back long before any drilling or pumping began. Now, the other part of this whole offshore problem has to do with aesthetics, the unsightliness of the drilling platforms. The new Secretary of Interior has agreed to extend into federal waters the sanctuary boundaries we've established to ban drilling in the areas of great scenic beauty. The real answer can come, of course, through technology, the development of submerged and unitized structures for drilling and subsequent pumping. And we'll be ready to move on this just as soon as such installations can be certified as practical. But one thing is certain, and I'm sure we're agreed. The people of Santa Barbara and all our coastal communities have and will continue to have our utmost help to solve this tragedy and to prevent future occurrences. Now, back in the 40s, smog was something the radio comedians joked about. Now it's hard to find any humor in some 13,000 tons of air pollution descending every day on the inhabitants of just one of our metropolitan areas. We've already made some progress in fighting air pollution, although it's hard to believe when the skylight dims and the air we breathe is visible, made visible by pollutants it contains. Governor Laxalt of Nevada told me that he had a Californian as a house guest up at Lake Tahoe last summer, and the fellow lived in terror for 4 days because he was breathing air he couldn't see. But we did turn the tide in 1966, and despite the increased number of cars on our streets, air pollution is on the decline. But that isn't enough. Our job now is to speed up that decline. Last year, we passed the toughest water quality control laws in the nation. We must have the same kind of tough laws to protect us from air pollution. Our state laws governing motor vehicle emissions are the toughest in the country, but they have to be made tougher. We must seriously consider whether propulsion systems other than the internal combustion engine are practical, and we'll continue our tests in this field. In the meantime, stringent vehicle emission standards we have established must be enforced. And the Air Resources Board is developing more effective emission test techniques so that every new vehicle can be checked before certification and sale. And we must move quickly against those stationary sources which continue to spew debris into our skies. During this session, I will seek your support for a passage of an omnibus clean air law. It would establish statewide comprehensive monitoring and control programs, require compliance with even stiffer motor vehicle emission standards, include new standards for the composition and volatility of gasoline, and set forth the regulatory program for agricultural and other open burning. Now, there are some other key environmental goals which we should achieve this year. The preservation of our relatively few estuaries, particularly in Southern California. The opening up of more of our coastal areas and beaches to public use. Initiating a broad program of conservation education in our schools. Encouraging further preservation and enhancement of the San Francisco Bay. Encouraging the preservation of the natural environment of the Tahoe Basin and instituting stricter pesticide controls. Now, as a partner in government, I applaud the proposal for an environmental committee in the Assembly. Recently, a state environmental policy council was formed in the executive branch. Lieutenant Governor Reinecke is chairman of that council, which is now reviewing many of the suggestions that emanated from the recent conference on changing environment. Some of those suggestions, I'm happy to say, came from the young people who represented our college campuses throughout the state. But in seeking to preserve the magic of California, we must avoid those extremes on either end which could destroy our state. We cannot go all the way with those who cry no more roads, no factories, no power plants. Neither can we go all the way with those who justify everything in the name of progress. The obvious destruction of our environment is far too great a price to pay. Progress and preservation are compatible. It is the refusal to work together for proper balance that is incompatible with the spirit of the 70s. We must be concerned about the quality of our environment. We must also be concerned with the quality of government and the integrity of those who serve in it. Last year, you passed and I signed a conflict of interest law, which, while it's made a start in the right direction, failed to give us what we really need to assure our fellow citizens that government in California will be beholden only to the people. Therefore, this year, in cooperation with the leadership of both houses, I will again propose conflict of interest legislation which will give California the most comprehensive laws of any state. This legislation will extend disclosure to cover all state civil service employees as well as all elective and appointive officials, including all constitutional officers, all salaried appointive officers, all judges, and the immediate families of each. It will also cover local officials, mayors, city councilmen, county supervisors, and officers of boards and commissions. Under its provisions, the provisions of this law, all state civil servants and non-salaried appointive officers and their immediate families would be required to disclose only those investments in activities directly regulated by the agency or department or the board of which the person was an employee or a member. Just as we protect the public from the possible unscrupulous public servant, so we must also protect the consumer from the possibility of an unscrupulous entrepreneur. We shall accelerate the progress in the area of consumer protection. We'll submit to you a reorganization proposal which would create within state government a Department of Consumer Affairs, the first of its kind in the nation. We will also move on several other administrative fronts. We will again this year recommend that public membership be increased on many of the state's regulatory boards and commissions. And I hope that together we can do this to give the people greater direct voice in the regulatory process. Business must, and generally does, serve to the people honestly and fairly. We must be careful that we don't penalize or harass the multitude of honest businessmen for the sins of the few. But those few must be brought into line or put out of operation. In the final analysis, the best protection for the consumer is to be fully armed with the facts about fair value, full measure, and safety. An important part of our consumer protection program will be to develop consumer education courses in schools in cooperation with the Department of Education. We enter the 70s with a continuing and a tremendous concern about the increasing problem of drug abuse and narcotics addiction. And I'll tell you, that problem has not been exaggerated. In fact, it is more serious than it appears in the news media. The physical and mental destruction of our youth is far greater than the public has been led to believe. Just as alarming is the growth of a drug culture which is tolerated, even touted by many who influence our youth. It is a culture which glorifies and justifies the drugged and the dropout. And it reaches into our high schools and even our junior high schools, into the suburbs as well as the slums. Now, together, we've already taken significant legislative and administrative steps to wage a war against the peddler and the pusher, and to help those who are desperately trying to free themselves from their drug-induced nightmares. Working with the private sector, we've embarked upon a wide-scale public education campaign to bring the facts and the horrors of drug abuse to our young people. We'll create a State Office of Narcotics and Drug Abuse Coordination. All the agencies and departments of state government will be instructed to cooperate with this office in a total fight against narcotics and dangerous drugs. And this is a war we intend to escalate, and it's a war we intend to win. Now, the laws we seek will involve the manufacture and sale of dangerous drugs, including licensing and bonding of shippers and warehouses, expanding the duties and the powers of the State Board of Pharmacy, making the penalties for the sale or manufacture of restricted and dangerous drugs consistent with the penalties for possession of such drugs, and using electronic surveillance equipment under proper judicial safeguards. We must all be deeply concerned about what J. Edgar Hoover called the wretched record of crime and violence during the 60s. Law enforcement on the whole has done an excellent job in spite of increasing demands and obstacles. Perhaps the thrust in the 70s should be on our correctional system. It is the repeating offender who causes the bulk of our problem. There must be a new strategy in the search for answers, and I propose an immediate, major, in-depth study of all correctional processes in California, and will make the details of this proposal available to you shortly. Even in these times of high employment, Welfare costs in California continue to climb at a rate beyond the capacity of our tax structure to keep pace. This increase each year is almost three times as great as our increase in revenues. During a period when we added 600,000 to our population, we added 400,000 to the welfare rolls and the rolls of those who were receiving cash grants from our government. We can and we are reducing administrative costs in welfare. We're eliminating the welfare fraud, which not only robs the taxpayer but victimizes the legitimate welfare recipient. But this isn't enough. We must be permitted to develop and implement a new approach. Welfare's purpose should be to eliminate as far as possible the need for its own existence. A newly created Department of Human Resources Development is a good start in that direction. Its goal is to rehabilitate and is the transfer of the rehabilitated from the welfare rolls to payrolls. Later in this session, I will make a specific message to you on welfare, including the findings of an independent fraud review panel. I will propose the organization of a new streamlined Department of Health so that we can more effectively administer and control the Medi-Cal program, which, like welfare, is one of the major and the fastest rising costs of state government. Together, we all of us have to have the courage to face up to some hard decisions. It's our responsibility to establish priorities so that our limited funds can be put to the best possible use. How much, for example, should be spent on welfare as compared to education? We know that education offers the greatest opportunity for breaking the welfare cycle. Yet the increase each year in welfare cost is almost double the increase we are able to give our schools. Last year, a commission I appointed on education reform completed the first phase of its work and made certain recommendations. These will be translated into concrete programs and legislation with reference to such important areas as teacher training, technical or vocational education, improved governance of public education system, and educational finance. As long as school financing comes almost solely from the accidental method of the property taxation, primary and secondary education will continue to experience serious fiscal difficulties and serious inequities between school districts. We must enact new ways to help finance schools and at the same time to provide relief from the far too heavy property tax burden, particularly on the homeowner. During this session, we must enact tax reform package that will get that job done. Meanwhile, Californians should be leery of pseudo-tax reform measures which could well cost them $1 billion a year in increased taxes. The task of higher education poses as great a challenge. We must achieve a greater measure of accountability from those public institutions. We must achieve greater effectiveness in the management and the priority of expenditures. Colleges must make full utilization of existing facilities and faculty before the taxpayer is asked to foot the bill for expansion. Faculty members and administrators must continually remind themselves or be reminded that their fundamental purpose is to provide conditions for effective learning and to give their students the top priority. The tone of the spirit and the spirit of the 70s will be on quality rather than quantity. Education must be adequately financed, but we must not judge excellence solely on the terms of the dollars spent. The true measure is achievement of students in the trades, in technical skills, in the professions, in the arts, and in the progress made by each as an individual. Now, there's another area I must emphasize as we enter the 70s, and that is the need, the absolute necessity, to hold down the cost of government. I'm sure you expected me to get around to that before I was finished. It's a harsh fact of life upon which most economists and historians are agreed that once the level of taxation reaches and remains at 35% of national income for any period of time, that nation cannot remain solvent or free. In our nation today, 37 cents out of each dollar earned is taken to pay the cost of government. In a few weeks, the budget for the fiscal year beginning next July will be submitted to you. I shall resist the temptation to find some adjective or phrase to apply as a title to this budget. To tell you the truth, I don't think an adequate word or phrase has yet been coined to fit this one. Very simply, no area of government will receive all it asked for. Unlike the federal government, we can't print money, And our state constitution says we can't spend beyond our revenues. So taking the estimated total to be collected in taxes, we have distributed these revenues for the most part in proportions similar to the distribution in the budget of last year. However, we asked each department to submit its own priorities in the order of importance. And the final decisions have to be made then on a comparison of some of these lower priority items of one department against those of another. Now, you and I may have a difference of opinion when it comes time to act on the budget on the area or on these priorities. And this is an area certainly for legitimate debate. But the budget as a whole is up to the limit of estimated revenues. Anyone suggesting additions should be prepared to recommend an additional tax to pay for them. And frankly, I hope no one will. Government as well as the individual must share the pain of inflation. Bastiat said, the state is the great fictitious entity by which each one is led to believe he can exist at the expense of someone else. It's time to recognize that we're all someone else. The individual's earnings, which are taken for taxes directly or indirectly, cannot be spent for food or clothing or education or retirement savings. Money taken by government cannot be used to provide jobs or higher wages for a growing labor force. And that brings me to another must, the need to bring government to heel, to make it not only more economical but also more responsive, so that the individual citizen can once again exercise control over the affairs of state. By now we should have learned our lesson. The more government does for people, the more it does to them. And then follows what Cicero called the arrogance of officialdom. Those who want to give the citizens more and more government usually end up giving them just that and little else. Our task for the 70s is not more government, but better government. At the beginning of the last decade, a young leader stood on the steps of the nation's capital and exhorted America to ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. And his challenge struck a chord in all our hearts. Now, on the threshold of a new decade, we might well add, ask also what we can do for ourselves. Ask what we can do to solve the problems of human misery about us without waiting for yet another government program. Now, I know that this will fall harshly on the ears of those who say that government and government spending is the only answer to our problems. But the great social ills are with us, not because of indifference or a lack of government effort. On the contrary, there have been massive and costly welfare programs in these last few decades. Too often, government is an unwarranted and unwanted middleman who becomes a part of the problem. In government, a massive war against poverty is an example because poverty is losing. On the other hand, in the war on that private sector is waging against poverty, hundreds of thousands of individuals not only have new jobs and incomes, they have a new sense of individual pride. The question is not whether the unfortunate should or should not be cared for. The real question is, how can we best care for them? And how, at the same time, can we help those who can help themselves to do so? Today, many of our young people are critical of what they call the establishment. And frankly, I think they have much to be critical about. There's a certain validity to many of the points they raise and the legitimacy of many of the grievances they list. They have at times been misled to premature or excessive action by those who took advantage of their concern. But now, I think there's evidence that they're wiser to the ways of those zealots who use them for non-constructive purposes. Many of our young people talk about a greater participation in our American democracy. And when asked about their plans for the future, they say they want to serve, to become, as they put it, meaningfully involved. Well, meaningful involvement is the very heart of a creative society. It's exactly what we mean when we say that government once again should be of and by, as well as for the people. That no government, no government program can ever do away with the need for individual participation. And if the young people are really looking for action, constructive action, which can make the decade of the 70s a benchmark of man's search for a better world. They can find it by working within the system, reforming it, making it more responsive to the citizenry, and helping to get it out of our pockets and off our backs. Some of our young people have said that what they're really looking for, what they're working for, is a return to the original purpose and the original spirit of America, a spirit which seems to have been pushed aside in this centralized, computerized, contemporary world. Well, that spirit may be lost temporarily, but I don't think it's died. Has democracy failed, or has it never really been completely tried? That idea that all men were created equal, that each man should be free to fly as high as his ability and his drive will take him, that each man counts and is accountable, beholden only to God for his sovereign rights. Just past the midway point in this new decade, we'll observe the 200th anniversary of the founding of this nation. Dare we imagine what the decade of the 70s could be if the spirit of those first American 70s, the 1770s, could be reawakened in our land? Dare we together envision what we could reach if that spirit became the spirit of the 1970s? More than a footprint on the moon, as great as that is, we could together leave an imprint on all time, and we could reaffirm a true yardstick by which to judge the state of this state for decades to come. Thank you.
As we adjourn this fourth opportunity of hearing the Governor's State of the State message in this joint session, I'd also like to call to your attention that once again we have the presence of the charming First Lady of the State of California, Mrs. Ronald Reagan, in the balcony. We stand adjourned.